Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for April 2, 2018. This is David Corey, along with my co-host Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Hey, David, and good evening, everyone. We have four segments tonight. First, we have a story courtesy of the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs on a group of veterans who formed an organization which provides emergency humanitarian response services around the world to help people faced with natural disasters and other crises. The organization is called Team Rubicon. It's a remarkable story of how some military veterans decided to put their skills to a different kind of public service after leaving the military, and how their work has also enabled them to cope with the sometimes difficult transition from military to civilian life. In our second segment, we have a story from the VA about how three different community organizations have partnered with the VA to help homeless veterans get off the streets and into housing and find employment. In our third segment, we have information on VA benefits for members of the National Guard and the Reserves. It's important because we know the military has relied so much since 2001 on the National Guard and Reserves in Iraq, Afghanistan, and other nations as well. And in our final segment, we will have more news from Washington, including the firing last week of the Secretary of the VA, Dr. David Shulkin. We'll discuss his firing as well as what we know of Dr. Ronnie Jackson, the White House physician who President Trump has said he will nominate as the new VA Secretary. But first, I'll remind everyone that this is a call-in show that welcomes your views, comments, and questions, so you can call us anytime during the show at 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. And let me remind you veterans that this is your show. It is the Veterans News Hour, so please call us with any comments you may have on the show or to discuss issues that you may have dealing with the VA. But first, let's go back to David.
Thanks, Richard. Our first story tonight is about a group called Team Rubicon. Team Rubicon is an international non-governmental organization founded by U.S. Marine veterans William McNulty and Jacob, or Jake, Wood. Team Rubicon is a veteran service organization that uses disaster response to help people in need, both in the United States and abroad, while simultaneously helping to reintegrate military veterans back into civilian life. Team Rubicon formed in January of 2010 following the Haiti earthquake, when William McNulty and Jake Wood led a medical team into Port-au-Prince 3 days after the earthquake. The first Team Rubicon was an initial team of eight. They gathered funds and medical supplies from friends and family and then flew into the Dominican Republic. They rented a truck, loaded their gear, and headed west to Haiti. The team treated thousands of patients traveling to camps deemed too dangerous by other aid organizations. They ventured outside the traditional scale of disaster response, focusing on those who would be overlooked and untreated. The experience was the beginning of Team Rubicon. Team Rubicon wanted to solve two problems. First, the inadequate disaster response, which is often slow to respond, has antiquated infrastructure, and is not using the best technological solutions or well-trained members. And second, inadequate veteran reintegration into civilian life, where military veterans whose training, skills, and experience make them very effective in disaster response can also help reduce suicide within the veteran community by giving the veterans a purpose and a focus and the team spirit that they're used to, and can address other reintegration issues by helping others in an opportunity to provide service to other people. Now, the death of fellow Rubicon member and military veteran Clay Hunt from suicide in 2011 refocused Team Rubicon's organizational mission more to help veterans make that often difficult transition from military to civilian life. The team's role in domestic disasters is both to provide humanitarian assistance as well, as I say, as an outlet to let veterans continue to serve other people. Now, since the Haiti earthquake, Team Rubicon has deployed on over 175 operations, including international operations in Pakistan, Chile, Burma, Thailand, Sudan, Ecuador, Nepal, Greece, and Turkey. Within the United States, Team Rubicon has responded to disasters such as Hurricane Matthew, Hurricane Irene, Tropical Storm Debbie, Hurricane Isaac, Hurricane Sandy, and the tornado destruction of the town of Moore, Oklahoma. So our first story will highlight Team Rubicon. And Doug, if you'll please roll the first tape.
We begin our show with a story of a remarkable group of Marine Corps veterans who teamed up with doctors to provide disaster relief for the victims of the 2010 earthquake in Haiti. That small group has grown to become Team Rubicon, a veteran service organization that stands ready to deploy emergency response teams all around the world.
We rolled into Port-au-Prince in the back of pickup trucks. As we got closer and closer to the city and then to the city center, the masses of people that were trying to move away from Port-au-Prince to go find something that was less chaotic just increased, and we were going in the opposite direction. We were going into the heart of it. It just incrementally got worse and worse. You know, you started to see on the outskirts of the city some of the destruction. Then you got closer and you saw entire buildings collapsed, and then you started to smell. You know, you could smell the bodies bloating in the sun and the heat. You could smell diesel fuel spilled across the street, burning tires, everything like that. And you know, to be quite honest, it was the same sights and smells that we had heard going through Fallujah or going through Baghdad or Afghanistan. My name is Jake Wood. I'm president and co-founder of Team Rubicon. One morning I woke up and I saw on the news what was going on in Port-au-Prince, and for a couple hours I just sat there and watched the television screen because the images that were coming back were so horrific and mind-blowing. And you know, after a little while of doing that, I decided that it was an opportunity to go down there and help. I put out a Facebook post and asked who wanted to join me to go down to Port-au-Prince, and literally a few minutes later, William McNulty gave me a call and said that he wanted to go. And you know, Team Rubicon was really born right then and there.
We put together a team of military veterans and medical professionals. We basically paired Marines with doctors, and we sent them into the hardest hit areas of Port-au-Prince and did medical triage.
You know, for a veteran like William or I, you know, we have a lot more to offer than $10. And we had skill sets that a lot of the volunteers at the Red Cross, a lot of the volunteers at the International Medical Corps didn't have. And we thought that our greatest asset, our greatest resource that we could provide was, you know, ourselves.
We're this flexible and dynamic, rapidly expanding, veteran-focused organization that pretty much have taken the helm on responding to disasters and using our former service members as our core of volunteers that we can call upon, and that's kind of where we're at now, 2.5 years into the organization.
Team Rubicon is different than other aid organizations because it's focused on the veteran. It's focused on giving that self-worth and that purpose and that community back to the veteran. So we're incorporating a lot of the same things that we learned, tactics, procedures that we learned in the military, but we're applying it to disaster response now.
We've been to Haiti, Burma, Pakistan, Chile. We recently have started responding to domestic disasters. Most notably were the tornadoes in the Midwest and a hurricane on the East Coast. Our deployments have been into pretty bad disasters. The sights, the smells, the devastation, the looks in people's eyes knowing that they've potentially lost everything or they have lost everything. The ability to approach a situation with a bit of tenderness, even though you're there for a very specific mission. There's a lot of similarities that make us the best people to send into an area like that.
I can't thank you all enough.
No, you're
I just
very well.
There is no words to say.
But, you know, you hear so much bad on television, but through this we've seen so much good.
I met Clay Hunt for the first time in 2006.
We were in the same platoon in Iraq. Clay's a Purple Heart winner. I was shot in Iraq. So we went to sniper school together. We were partners all through sniper school, and we deployed together to Afghanistan as snipers.
Wow.
We've been through a lot.
Clay Hunt was a friend who I had not met until the Haiti earthquake. Clay didn't go down with the first team into Port-au-Prince, but he saw us on the news, actually. He woke up in the middle of the night, purchased a plane ticket to the Dominican Republic, and found us at the largest hospital, the General Hospital in Port-au-Prince.
I've been in two third world countries where every second that I've walked through, I've been having to worry about my own safety before I could worry about doing good and helping others. It was a complete opposite down in Haiti. I didn't have to worry once about my safety. I was there to do a job, to help people, and I have a renewed faith in humanity.
Clay found disaster relief very therapeutic. This is what he told me. You know, Clay said that this is, you know, he wanted to do this type of work for the rest of his life.
Here to help. I'll be here till he goes home. Buddy was my best man at my wedding. Been my best friend for the last few years. Got to be here. I don't think there's a better place I could be right now. So,
you know, one of the things that Clay struggled with mightily was some of the mental and emotional problems that a lot of veterans are coming home from war with. And, you know, he had a lot of difficulty dealing with his experiences and dealing with the guilt that he had and that he associated with having survived the war when so many of our friends lost their lives over there. We tried to get him help on a number of occasions. He was going into the VA for counseling, and eventually we had him move back to Houston, Texas to be with his family. Shortly after moving back to Houston, things just kind of hit rock bottom for him, even though they appeared to be all right. And he ended up taking his own life on March 30th of 2011. So after the dust settled from Clay's suicide, we really took some time to reevaluate what it was we were doing at Team Rubicon. You know, when we started out, we saw ourselves as an organization that was looking to transform disaster response by using veterans. And, you know, we saw an opportunity to provide, you know, the volunteers that were working with us some of the things that we knew Clay was missing. And you know, Clay, he didn't kill himself because of what happened to us over in Iraq and Afghanistan. He killed himself because of what he lost when he came home. And, you know, he was missing a mission in his life. He was missing community. And, you know, he really didn't feel like he had any self-worth anymore.
When Clay took his own life, it caused us to take a really hard look at the organization, and it caused us to change the focus to the veteran rather than the disaster victim. And that might sound trivial, but it's actually very important. We're recreating that self-worth, that mission, that purpose, that community, to try and help those people who are suffering from the same symptoms that Clay was, adjust, reintegrate into society.
My name's Kevin Heslin, and I'm a research health scientist with the VA Emergency Management Evaluation Center. My colleagues and I are interested in eventually doing a large-scale, sort of long-term study with Team Rubicon so that we can really try to track the mental health benefits of volunteer work on veterans.
The VA approached us about a study they wanted to do regarding the efficacy of a program such as ours for actual therapeutic, measurable results. Could our program, could our volunteer organization that is repurposing veteran skills in disaster relief actually measurably have an answer?
The VA has a huge focus on reintegration into civilian society, and how can we help veterans to do that better? So the idea that this kind of emergency management volunteer work would contribute to that is very exciting.
We have veterans unsolicited email us all the time with thanks and praise for the opportunity to work with us and what it has meant to them. But at the end of the day, that's not real quantitative evidence. That's not scientific. That's not anything that we can say, here, you see, we're right. You know, this is helping veterans. And so with the VA, we're really hoping that we can conduct a formal study that proves that the idea of continued service is something that is beneficial to the veteran and to their transition and to their reintegration into civil society.
Over the last 10 years, it's been very hard for veterans to identify progress. But when you're either saving the life of a child in Port-au-Prince after the earthquake, or whether you're tarping someone's roof in Joplin after a tornado, progress is immediately identifiable, and that's of extreme value to the veteran.
The difference between going on a mission with Team Rubicon versus the experiences that volunteer might have had in uniform, you know, you're going into a similar environment, but the entire feeling is different. You're not going in there fearing for your life. You're not going in there with a mission that you may be uncomfortable with. You're going there to help people. And I think for the veterans who get involved, that's incredibly therapeutic to know that you're needed and you're wanted, and your only mission in life is to go improve the lives of people whose lives have been devastated. It's really cathartic for the veteran.
There is the hope when you fill out our application that one day you will receive a phone call from me saying, we need you to fly to Africa for this mission. Are you available? And I think that is a very powerful feeling of hope for a lot of people. You know, a lot of people who've lost their mission, I think that's that sense of purpose, that sense of reusing their experience is important and it's powerful, and that's what we do.
If you'd like to get more information or sign up, just visit TeamRubiconUSA.org.
Well, I think that's a great program, a great example of what Team Rubicon is doing. And as was said, if you're interested in learning more about Team Rubicon, the work it's done, the work it's planning to do, perhaps if you're interested in joining it, its website is TeamRubiconUSA.org. That's Team, RubiconUSA.org. TeamRubiconUSA.org. Richard, I know you've done a tremendous amount of community work going back to your high school years. What are your thoughts on Team Rubicon and what it does?
Well, I think it's terrific, and it focuses on one basic element whenever you're doing any sort of community outreach, especially for those who might have issues like veterans might with PTSD or even people who are in recovery of some sort. And that is the best medicine is giving back to someone else. You know, whenever you're reaching out to someone else, it makes you feel good, gets you out of self. So, you know, Team Rubicon is just illustrates another way that veterans can do things for other people. And like they said, they refocused Team Rubicon into helping the veteran versus focusing on helping the cause. By helping the veteran, you're going to help the cause, but they had to focus on the veteran. So I think it's terrific. It just, like I said, it's another example of ways that veterans can do things for other people and then help themselves. And if you can't join Team Rubicon, there's always probably things in your local community that you can do. Same type of outreach program. So I think it's awesome. That was a great
thing. Absolutely. You're right, Richard. Yeah, there are so many other veteran groups, and we've had some of their representatives on our show over the last year. Groups of sometimes they're literally called veterans helping veterans. It's the same thought of service to others. So let's go to our next segment tonight, which is about the issue of veteran homelessness. The VA and private organizations continue to work hard to address that problem. This next story highlights three community groups which partner with the VA to help homeless veterans. The three groups include an organization called Veterans Matter, based in Toledo, Ohio, another group called Military Outreach USA, based in Northbrook, Illinois, and a third organization called Salute, with offices in Clinton Township, Michigan, Chicago, Illinois, and Charlotte, North Carolina. So, Doug, if you'll please roll tape two.
For any organization that's focused on helping homeless veterans, only by coming together in partnership with the VA and all of the other community collaborators can we really solve this problem nationwide. What Veterans Matter has become is this incredible collaboration of the VA and businesses and foundations and regular Americans who have become guardian angels to homeless veterans on the streets. And our job is simply to eliminate any barriers they might have.
We know that veterans are homeless longer than their non-veteran counterparts, and they're homeless at higher rates than their non-veteran counterparts. And many times our veterans are not going to present in a shelter, so we go out into the woods along bridges and overpasses and highways and find those veterans who are camping outside. Before Veterans Matter was started, Ken, Leslie, and I were out doing outreach one day, and he asked me, What's one thing that veterans need to quickly exit the streets and go into permanent housing? And I said, you know, the deposits are taking us a long time. They're holding the process up. Plus, we have to take the veteran to various agencies to ask them for money for the deposit for their apartment.
And I said, so you're telling me you got this housing, and then after they get housed, you're able to provide the services and case management, but they can't get there because of the deposit? He says, yeah, and that broke my heart. And that night came up with this idea, Veterans Matter, we take care of our own, write the check straight to the landlord, 100% success rate. I called the foundation, said, I need $26,250. And by the way, I need it black ops speed because there's 35 veterans waiting. So it was 11 days from idea to execution. And now we've grown and we've housed almost 1,450 veterans.
I was living in my car for about 2 months, and then I met Sean and then Ken, and then he got me a hotel for the week. And then after that week, I had this place. This place is awesome. Like, it's very quiet and chill, and it feels great. It feels good to do laundry and take a shower. The basics again, you know, feels real good.
Also, Veterans Matter has been a great partner in helping with volunteers who help us go out and do street-level outreach blitzes in different counties within our catchment area. Their volunteers also come and visit our veterans for socialization and assistance with any type of personal goals that they might have, like taking them out and getting a haircut or their beard trimmed, going grocery shopping, purchasing clothes for veterans who are getting a job. So that's pretty neat.
Just like Veterans Matter found a way to help our veterans, that's what every community needs to do, is find that hole, find what's missing, and fill that. Don't come up with a program where you just think it's a great idea. Find out first what the veterans really need, and then fill that need, and you'll have a perfect formula to be able to serve the people that we're trying to serve.
Military Outreach USA is a 501c3 not-for-profit. And we work through a network of houses of worship, businesses, organizations, schools, and caring individuals to help serve veterans, active duty military personnel, National Guard, reserves, and their families. It's all wrapped under the umbrella name of Adopt a VA.
Once we help a veteran to find a safe living situation, we know that an apartment isn't a home until they've got some items to make it comfortable. So Military Outreach really identified that as a need and do a lot of coordination of furniture donations, mattresses, box springs, move-in essential items like small appliances and shower curtains and towels and cleaning products and hygiene products. They really are crucial in helping a veteran get set up in their apartment.
To be able to do something, whether it's just picking up some donated items and dropping them off at the VA or helping someone furnish their apartment with donated furniture that has been picked up and supplying them a bed, and then to meet them and to see how it's changed their life, I mean, that's what it's all about.
Well, I feel like I'm a king because I go to my apartment, I make whatever noise I want, I don't have to listen to anybody complain. Okay, what I want to eat, it's all mine. It's great. It's great knowing I have a roof over my head at all times.
Having your own place and being on your own again, it makes you feel, you know, worthwhile, like I used to feel, you know?
Let's see what we have in here. For any future partnerships, just being willing to hear out what our needs are in terms of helping veterans with move-in essentials and furniture items and things like that, and maybe being willing to hear out what our barriers are and how to help us overcome them. But partnerships are extremely valuable, and I think we've experienced that through our partnership with Military Outreach. Absolutely.
I often say that it's not that people don't want to help veterans, they don't know how to help. And what we accomplish in the Adopt a VA program is we bring awareness to those people that want to help. The VA cannot fill all the needs of services that veterans need. And if we don't do it, who else will?
I've been in the data center industry for over 30 years, and I had a career at the same time as an Army reservist for 36 years. So I saw problems from both sides. The data center industry is suffering a severe personnel shortage, and veteran unemployment rates were unacceptably high when we started this 4 years ago. So we took those two problems and focused on them, came up with Salute Mission Critical, and have put more than 500 veterans into the industry as they graduate from our program and take on full-time careers with data center companies.
There's a variety of positions as to what it takes to operate a facility, everything from the facility side to the IT side. And what we've been able to do is take veterans and get them entry-level positions, training both on the IT and the facility side to give them a competitive advantage as to where the industry is transitioning in the next 5 years. Our techs will have a leg up on other folks out there.
A lot of companies say that they're veteran-friendly without knowing exactly what that means. And Salute exemplifies a veteran-friendly company. They're willing to make accommodations and to create onboarding programs that are designed specifically for our homeless veterans. So it increases their chances of success and also sustainability in terms of employment and housing.
Our partnership with the VA Homeless Program has been phenomenal. Working with Beatrice, we've been able to fill roles for our clients with many individuals who blossom. None of these individuals want to be homeless. It's something that they find themselves being. And so for them to take that strength and that courage that they have utilized in their past serving our country, and now they're utilizing it for themselves, to make themselves successful. They're the ones who are pushing forward and are working hard and are taking in all of this information that's being thrown at them and learning it and then putting it into use on a daily basis.
Me maintaining the job makes me feel a whole lot better, because it's a big step from, you know, you go up, then you drop down low and they have nothing, and now you're bouncing back. It feels real good.
To be able to see someone just want a chance to work and have an organization offer them that opportunity, and to see them succeed, to see their confidence build, to see that they're able to secure income and then secure housing and live a full life, is extremely rewarding.
We have this incredible partnership with the VA where, in all truth, they're the ones that do the heavy lifting and do all the work. VA is incredible in how it is looking for solutions to problems, engaging community partners to be able to help the veterans get housed, organizations that are providing the beds and the furniture needed for it to help stabilize them, and then different programs that help reemploy people. And the VA has gone out and invited these partners to come in. As regular Americans, we're able to rally with the VA to help people that risked all for all of us.
If you'd like to learn more about the three groups in this segment, you can find their website, Veterans Matter, based in Toledo, Ohio. Their website is veteransmatter.org. That's veteransmatter.org. Military Outreach USA, based in Illinois. The website is militaryoutreachusa.org. That's militaryoutreachusa.org. And then finally, Salute, which offices in Michigan, Illinois, and North Carolina. Its website is saluteinc.com, which is saluteinc.com. Over to you, Richard.
Thanks, David. Before we get to our next segment, you know, one of the things that struck me about that that last segment is I don't think that civilians and the average person walking around the streets realizes the extent of the homelessness amongst our veterans. You know, depending on where you live, you might see a little bit more than others. I know where I'm located in north of Tampa, closer to central Florida, there's a lot of veterans, and we have a lot of homeless veterans literally living in the woods. I think one of the segments, this past segment, even talked about that. You know, they're not walking on the streets that you might see in the inner cities, but they are literally living in the woods under these makeshift tents. And, you know, so it's a huge, huge problem. So we'll get to our third segment tonight, which is of particular interest to veterans who serve in the National Guard or the Reserves. It provides an overview of the VA benefits available to them to their service. So, Doug, please roll tape number 3, VA benefits for National Guard and Reserve service members.
As a National Guard or Reserve member,
Your VA, the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, honors your service and is ready to serve you.
I wouldn't be here today as a successful woman without the help that I received from the reserve and paid for my education and the compensation that VA gave me.
VA benefits can provide support in areas such as disability compensation, insurance, loan guarantee, pension, health care, education, dependents and survivors, burial, and vocational rehabilitation and employment. And this support often transcends generations.
What's important about VA benefits is they don't just touch you as an individual. They can touch your parents, maybe your grandparents, your child.
Serving in a reserve component of our armed forces has a unique status with different levels of service obligations. Your eligibility for some VA benefits requires a certain amount of time of active service. Active service can be active duty in the form of an overseas deployment as part of a unit mobilization or full-time National Guard duty. Even if you're a traditional reservist or technician, where you're reporting for training once a month and 2 weeks a year, you may be eligible for some VA benefits, such as home loan guarantee and education, based on your length of service. At benefits.va.gov/guard reserve, you can learn about and apply for your VA benefits. Some of the benefit programs relate to having a service-connected disability, whether that disability occurred during a training period or during active duty.
If your disabilities continue to worsen, they will work with you, so it's always there. It's a benefit that I can always have access to because of my disability.
Zarina Prashay Cole served in the Army and then spent nearly 6 years as a traditional reservist. During her time on active duty, she experienced a crush injury, a condition that got worse after her separation from the reserves. With her ability to type or write severely limited, she turned for help to VA's Vocational Rehabilitation and Employment, or VOC Rehab program, which provides career preparation and independent living services to veterans with a service-connected disability.
My injury was beginning to bother me at work. It was affecting my productivity at work, and I was concerned about losing my job. So I applied for VOC Rehab, and what they did, they took me through a series of rehabilitation testing and worksite evaluation, and then they were able to ascertain what I needed on the job that would help me to be more proficient.
Through her VR&E benefit, Zarina was trained to use voice recognition software, a tool that's really helped her at the office. She also receives VA disability compensation for her service-connected injury. This monthly benefit amount varies depending on the severity of the disability, as well as when spouses or dependent children are factored in. For Zarina, that extra support has made a big difference.
There was a time where things were a little tight, and having that benefit from the VA really helped me get over that hump. And so I was just very happy that the benefits really helped my family.
While many benefit programs meet needs associated with service-connected disabilities, there are many benefits available to National Guard members and reservists, like education and home loan guarantee, with much broader eligibility.
I had no way of paying for college, no way of paying for school, and the military gave me that way, and it continues to.
Derek Smith's nearly quarter century of service in the armed forces includes 7 years in the Army National Guard. With a call-up in 2003, Derek became eligible for post-9/11 GI Bill benefits.
I just finished a master's degree recently, and now I'm working on another degree as well. So the military made that all possible. My veterans' benefits made that all possible.
With a VA-guaranteed home loan, he's achieved other big goals as well.
My wife and I were able to pick the home that we wanted. It was basically our dream home. We were able to pay a small amount down, and we were able to get into the house, and we're still in it today.
Like Derek, many National Guard or Reserve members are eligible for multiple benefits. To keep track of what he receives, Derek uses eBenefits, the VA and DOD's online benefits portal, where you can review educational benefit amounts, calculate home loan eligibility, and apply for other VA benefits.
eBenefits has been wonderful to me. I don't have to pick up the phone and call anybody, even though they're available as well. But I've been able to answer most of my own questions just by checking online.
While many benefits can be secured today, others, like VA insurance benefits, are available to provide security both during and after your service in the National Guard or Reserves ends.
The very first benefit you're entitled to when you join the military is Service Members Group Life Insurance.
Mike Carr serves in the West Virginia Air National Guard. As a traditional Guard member, he was automatically enrolled in Service Members Group Life Insurance, or SIGLI.
It's kind of like out of sight, out of mind, but you know you have a peace of mind with insurance benefits. So it's really one of those, it's kind of like an unsung hero of all VA benefits, I think.
All Guard members and reservists are covered under SIGLI. But when you're separating or retiring, converting SIGLI coverage must be done within certain time limits.
If you are thinking about getting out of the Guard, you convert over to either Veterans Group Life Insurance or a commercial policy, because again, you can do so without proof of good health.
Veterans Group Life Insurance, or VIGLI, provides lifetime renewable term coverage regardless of health. And if you have a service-connected disability, Service Disabled Veterans Insurance can provide coverage at affordable premiums. For Mike, VA insurance is part of a package of benefits that have made a big impact in his life.
I've been tremendously satisfied with the VA benefits that I've received. They were able to help me get a college education, enjoy the privileges of home ownership, so it's been very beneficial to me.
Even if you separated years ago from the National Guard or Reserves, your eligibility for benefits may still remain.
I lost 6 years of compensation because I thought I wasn't entitled to benefits because 6 years had elapsed. No matter what the time is, apply for your benefits. You earn them. VA is ready to help you. Just apply and let them make that decision.
You've served your country, and VA is ready to serve you with benefits including disability compensation, insurance, loan guarantee, pension, health care, education, dependents and survivors, burial, and vocational rehabilitation and employment. Achieve your next mission. Learn about and apply for your VA benefits today.
Well, for additional information about those VA benefits for veterans, including those who served in the Guard or Reserves, the VA website, which is easy to remember, it's va.gov, va.gov is an excellent resource. Over to you, Richard.
Thank you, David. And that's very interesting. Another great segment. Really appreciate the effort you put in there, David. As most people already know, VA Secretary Dolvin David Shulkin was fired on Wednesday, March 28th, by President Trump, who has also said he will nominate the White House physician, Dr. Ronnie Jackson, to serve as the new Secretary of the VA. David Shulkin has been in the news of late, giving interviews, and he indicated that he got his announcement that he was fired by a tweet, which is unfortunate. I think David Shulkin did his best as Secretary of the VA. And I'd like to read a letter that David Shulkin wrote in response to his termination as head of the VA. This was widely published in papers around the country over the past several days. And I'm now quoting. "It has been my greatest professional honor to serve our country's more than 20 million veterans. Almost 3 years ago, I left my private sector job running hospitals and came to Washington to repay my gratitude to the men and women who put their lives on the line for our country. I believe strongly in the mission of the Department of Veteran Affairs, and nothing about my political experience in Washington could ever change that. I also believe that maintaining a strong VA is an essential piece of the puzzle that is the United States national security system. We can only expect our sons and daughters to risk their lives and fight for our freedom if we can keep our promise to care for them when they return home broken, injured, or traumatized. There is no excuse for not holding up our end of the bargain. The mission set forth by President Abraham Lincoln to care for those who have borne the battle is a sacred duty that I will remain committed to always. During my tenure at the department, we have accomplished a tremendous amount. We passed critical legislation that improved the appeals process for veterans seeking disability benefits, enacted a new GI Bill, and helped ensure that we employ the right people to work at the department. We've expanded access to health care by reducing wait times, increasing productivity, and working more closely with the private sector. We have put in place more and better mental health services for those suffering from the invisible wounds of war. We are now processing more disability claims and appeals than ever before, and, for the first time, allowing veterans to see the status of their appeals by simply logging onto their accounts. Unemployment among veterans is near its lowest level in years at 3.5%. And the 70% of veterans who have regained trust in VA service has risen to 70% from 46% 4 years ago. It seems that these successes within the department have intensified the ambitions of people who want to put VA healthcare in the hands of the private sector. I believe differences in philosophy deserve robust debate and solutions should be determined based on the merits of the argument. The advocates within the administration for privatizing VA health services, however, reject this approach. They saw me as an obstacle to privatization who had to be removed. That is because I am convinced that privatization is a political issue aimed at rewarding select people and companies with profits, even if it undermines care for veterans. Until the past few months, veteran issues were dealt with in a largely bipartisan way. My 100-0 Senate confirmation was perhaps the best evidence that the VA has been the exception to Washington's political polarization. Unfortunately, the department has become entangled in a brutal power struggle, with some political appointees choosing to promote their agendas instead of what's best for veterans. These individuals who seek to privatize veteran health care as an alternative to government-run VA care unfortunately fail to engage in realistic plans regarding who will care for the more than 9 million veterans who rely on the department for life-sustaining care. The private sector, already struggling to provide adequate access to care in many communities, is ill-prepared to handle the number and complexity of patients that would come from closing or downsizing VA hospitals and clinics, particularly when it involves the mental health needs of people scarred by the horrors of war. Working with community providers to adequately ensure that veterans' needs are met is a good practice. But privatization leading to the dismantling of the department's extensive health care system is a terrible idea. The department's understanding of service-related health problems is groundbreaking research, and its special ability to work with military veterans cannot be easily replicated in the private sector. I have fought to stand up for this great department and all that it embodies. In recent months, though, the environment in Washington has turned so toxic, chaotic, disrespectful, and subversive that it became impossible for me to accomplish the important work that our veterans need and deserve. I can assure you that I will continue to speak out against those who seek to harm the VA by putting their personal agendas in front of the well-being of our veterans. As many of you know, I am a physician, not a politician. I came to government with an understanding that Washington can be ugly, but I assumed that I could avoid all the ugliness by staying true to my values. I have been falsely accused of things by people who wanted me out of the way. But despite these politically based attacks on me and my family's character, I'm proud of my record and know that I acted with the utmost integrity. Unfortunately, none of that mattered. As I prepare to leave government, I am struck by a recurring thought. It should not be this hard to serve your country. Well, David, that's quite a statement from outgoing Secretary Shulkin. And you can pick apart a lot of the stuff that he says here. And one of his lines here is that really jumped at me was he says, they saw me as an obstacle to privatization who had to be removed. That is because I'm convinced that privatization is a political issue aimed at rewarding select people and companies with profits, even if it undermines care for veterans. Now, David, you and I have been speaking about that since our show went on the air, and I think we both agree that privatization is a bad thing for the VA. What are your thoughts, David?
Well, I think that is a very powerful letter that Dr. Shulkin wrote. I'm glad he took the time to do it. You know, so many people, when they leave the government, particularly where they've been fired and such, an unusual way that he was fired, you know, they may tend to be very bitter. On the positive side, though, Dr. Shulkin, as I said, he wrote that letter, which really lays out an important perspective that I hope people will keep in mind. Dr. Shulkin had a lot of supporters in Congress and a lot of supporters within the major veteran groups. Don't take my word for it. Go out, you know, and on the internet and see what these major veteran groups say. I think there are some, though, there are which are a minority of the veteran groups that that really want to push privatization, they'll deny it because they know that it's a poisonous term. But the reality is there seems to be a big push to basically move veteran health services to the private sector. Dr. Shulkin's view from his vantage point, and keep in mind that before he was the secretary of the entire VA, that during the President Obama administration, the latter years of that administration, he was the head of the Veterans Health Administration. So he was the only cabinet member in the current Trump administration that had previously had such a high-level position in the Obama administration. So he has that perspective. But I think it's very important to consider. Go ahead.
Now, David, you what can you tell us about Dr. Ronnie Jackson? I know, Dr. Shulkin says here in his statement, and I'm quoting again, as many of you know, I am a physician, not a politician. Well, Dr. Ronnie Jackson, as we know, is a physician. In fact, he is President Trump's physician and not a politician. So what more can you tell us about Dr. Ronnie Jackson?
Well, I think it's important to note that Dr. Shulkin's background is Dr. Shulkin's being a bit too humble in his letter when he says he's just a physician. He has extensive background in hospital administration and reforming the delivery of medical services in the private sector. So he's got that background. Dr. Ronnie Jackson, who is a military physician, he's 50 years old. He's been assigned to the White House as one of the White House physicians since 2006, going back to the George W. Bush administration. Now, during President Obama's administration, he was elevated to the role of the physician to the president. That was in July of 2013, selected by President Obama. And when President Trump took over, Dr. Jackson was retained in that position. He's a native of Texas. He graduated from Texas A&M University in 1991 with a degree in marine biology. Went to medical school at the University of Texas, medical branch, graduating in 95. He's board certified in the field of emergency medicine. He began active duty naval service in 1995. He's been on active duty since then, various assignments stateside and overseas with a deployment in Iraq as a surgical shock trauma physician with a unit stationed there in Iraq with the Marine Corps. And in 2006, while he was still in Iraq, he was then selected upon his return to serve as a White House physician. And he's been in that role. By coincidence, earlier last week, he had been nominated for promotion within the military, the rank of Rear Admiral Upper Half. That he was nominated on March 23rd, 2018. But I've read that since then, with the March 28th, 2018 announcement of President Trump, that Admiral Jackson would then be ending his military career, and then if he's confirmed, then he would take over those duties as Secretary of the VA. A lot of different views in the veteran community out there, and it's basically that Dr. Jackson's administrative skills don't at all seem to be as extensive as Dr. Shulkin's. As you know, as you see from his resume, yes, Admiral Jackson is a veteran. He served in Iraq. He's been serving in a rather unique job as a White House physician since 2006. You know, so what preparation does he have then for managing, the second largest government organization, the VA? We'll have to see. A lot of skeptics out there. Time will tell. Over to you, Richard.
I agree with you, David. I'm wondering, he clearly has a very distinct background, but he's now going to be taking over a department that has 377,000 employees. There are I think approximately 168 hospitals around the country, another 1,200 to 1,500 clinics around the country. I mean, it's a awesome task for anybody. And when I look at his resume, I don't see a lot of administrative background training, and I think it's going to be a problem. But hopefully he can step up and get a good team around him. I was listening to one of Secretary Shulkin's interviews, and that's one of the things that he suggested to Dr. Jackson, was to assemble a good team, not necessarily a team that's currently there, bringing his own people. And so hopefully he'll get it done. You know, it's important to take care of our vets, and we don't want to step backwards. We want to keep moving forward, and let's see what happens. So you have any additional thoughts on that, David, before I go into coaching in the camp?
Don't. So why don't you bring us to that next point?
All right. Before we close the show tonight, we'd like to provide with our weekly reminder to veterans and their families about an important VA program called Coaching in the Care. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching in the Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call. Toll free 1-888-823-7458. Its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Again, the VA's Coaching in the Care number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I would like to once again remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs also has the Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they didn't get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. So call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Back to you, Dave.
Thanks, Richard. Been another quick hour this evening. It's time for us to go. I'd like to thank you all for listening to the Veterans News Hour here on BBS Radio, Station 1. We'd also like to thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom, for the great job he always does. We'd like to invite listeners to become show guests, sponsors, and advertisers. Our contact information is on our show's website, which is bbsradio.com/the Veterans News Hour, where you can also find archived podcasts of our prior shows for your benefit. So please tune in next week, the same time, same station, for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Until then, we hope you have a great week. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.